Hello, friends, and welcome to the PrepWell podcast. I'm your host, Phil Black. And if you have an 8th, 9th, or 10th grader with big aspirations, like the Ivy League, or military service academies like West Point, ROTC, or athletic scholarships, boom, you've come to the right place. My specialty, my superpower, if you will, is preparing families for these competitive programs. I'll teach you what your child should do, when they should do it, and how you can help. So stick around and prepare to out-prepare. Hello, friends, and welcome to the show. Today, I want to explain why I don't care where your child goes to college. I really don't. And by the way, the same goes for my own kids, three of whom are knee-deep in the college admissions process. I don't care where they go either. Now, there are a lot of other things that I do care about with respect to your child and my kids, but it ain't necessarily where they go to college. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, whoa, hold the phone here. This doesn't make any sense. How could you not care about where your PrepWellers, including your own kids, go to college? Isn't that your job? I thought you were the guy who helps kids who want to get into highly selective and competitive colleges. How then does where they go not matter? That's a fair question, and one I will take the next few minutes to explain. One of the key insights that I've learned working with hundreds of students and families over the years is that the college a student ultimately attends isn't nearly as important as the skills they acquire during the college admissions process. Let me say that a different way. The process is more important than the prize. In my experience, this finding holds true even in extreme cases. Let's say, for example, we compare Princeton versus a community college. I know of a student who was not at all engaged in the admissions process. In fact, his dad confided in me that he and his wife did almost all of the work for their son. His application, communicating with coaches, the essays, but he was still accepted to Princeton, where he was a legacy student and a recruited athlete. On the other hand, I know a different student who was extremely engaged in the admissions process, who dug into every aspect of the application and essay writing and research and interview practice, who ended up going to a local community college for financial reasons. The Princeton guy ended up graduating late, floundering, and moving home with his parents. It turns out he didn't have a clue. He didn't have a resume. He didn't take part in any of the on-campus recruiting opportunities. He didn't know how to research employers. He hadn't thought about life after college. And he lost a lot of momentum. He was ill-equipped to transition to the real world, Princeton and all. The community college guy, on the other hand, transferred to Cal Berkeley after 2 years. He graduated magna cum laude. He was president of the speech and debate team. He applied to and was accepted to law school, which he deferred for a year so he could clerk for a circuit court judge. In my opinion, the dramatic difference in outcomes had its roots in how well prepared each student was for the college experience, how seriously they each took the undergraduate admissions process in high school. Obviously, one didn't take it seriously at all and ended up not knowing many, if any, of the skills that he should have learned along the way. And the other, who learned all the skills during high school, was able to repeat those skills multiple times as he leapfrogged ahead. Which begs the question, how do I help my child fully engage in the college admissions process so they'll be ready to make the most of their college experience and beyond, no matter where they go, whether it's Princeton or Passaic Polytech? This reminds me of a story that really drives home this point. Last year, I met a gentleman who had been following me online and through social media and had heard good things about how I work with high school students and how early I engage with students and PrepWell Academy. He liked my track record, and I think he was referred to me through one of my private students who happened to get into all 14 schools that he applied to, which is in most cases unheard of, including Penn and Brown and Berkeley and UCLA. Well, this gentleman offered me $25,000 to be his son's private college admissions counselor, and I turned it down. As good as the money sounded, it was not a great fit. It turned out that his son wasn't overly motivated and exactly chomping at the bit to work with an advisor. I mean, basically, I got the impression that the dad wanted me to do everything for him and, of course, get him into a prestigious college, develop a list of schools, advise him on extracurriculars, do the research for him, write his essays, write his activities list, contact the teachers for letters of recommendation, choose his major, and the list went on and on. And while technically I could do all those things and probably done a pretty good job and maybe even get him into a strong college, but in my mind, it was clear that this would be a misuse of my time and expertise, and most importantly, would be doing his son exactly zero favors. I had seen how this movie played out many times before, and it was never good. And the experience prompted me to reflect on how I work with students, what I teach students and why, and what our ultimate goal should be. And from this experience came the insight that I don't really care where your child goes to college. I care about what they do to prepare for college. And mind you, this insight gives comfort to a lot of families these days who understand how unpredictable the college admissions process can be. They're no longer holding their breaths and waiting to see if their child gets into their first choice because it no longer holds so much weight. I've taken this part of the process, this very stressful part, out of the equation. Families that I work with and students who are enrolled in Prepl Academy, they no longer focus on the colleges. They focus on the skills learned during the process, which is refreshing. The truth is, the college admissions process is not something that should be hacked or bypassed or bought or engineered to guarantee a student gets into a particular college. It shouldn't be, but of course, we've all heard that for a certain price and in certain cases, it can be. It has been, and probably will continue to be, and it's a shame. Because all of that time and effort and money and shenanigans, not only is it criminal, but it's missing the point. It's not even solving what matters. The steps in the college admissions process, and there are many, that students must learn are the same ones that will help them find success after high school. Whether that's getting a job on campus, or a summer job, or an internship, or if they need to petition to change majors or even transfer to another school, if they don't work on these tasks, or worse, someone does it for them, they won't know how to do them. It's my job and Prepwell's mission to teach students how to manage and become proficient at these skills, because these skills matter. Why? Because they're the skills that will be important down the road. I call them life skills, or repeatable skills, or sticky skills, things that will stay with them over time. And my goal is to help students learn these sticky skills. If they learn them, it doesn't really matter where they go to college. Or frankly, if they go to college. Now, maybe that's a bit of an overstatement for effect, but it's not that far from the truth. That's what I mean by I don't care where they go to college. I do care deeply about whether they learn the skills associated with applying to college, but I don't get hung up on Boston College or Boston University. Now, I'm sure I'll get some blowback from parents on this. They're going to be wondering, am I really suggesting that there's no difference between going to Princeton and a community college? No, not quite. I understand that in most cases that this is a pretty big difference. But I've also seen cases where the outcomes were the opposite of what one would expect. From what I know, I would personally put my money on a motivated community college student who's mastered these sticky skills in high school versus the Princeton student who had their parents snow plowing for them their entire lives, and didn't know how to write a cover letter or a resume or anything. That's a fact. And I've seen this play out in real life many times. And listen, I'm eating my own dog food as well. I have four sons. Three of them are going through the admissions process right now. And the tone in our house is learn the skills, prepare yourself as best you can, do your best work, and let the chips fall where they may. And remember, with the admissions process as unpredictable as it is these days, this is not a bad philosophy to adopt for your mental health. I'm far more interested that my sons learn and execute the 10 sticky skills that I'm about to talk about versus what colleges they get into. If they get into a competitive college that's a good fit, awesome. If they decide they want to go to community college, maybe to save money, that's great too. I do, however, make learning the skills a priority, because that's what's in their control, and that's what's going to have long-term effects. Prepl Academy's mission is to prepare students well for college, not to get them into a particular college. Otherwise, I would have called it Get Into Academy. Sometimes one thing will lead to another, but not always. When families buy into this concept, the stress level goes down dramatically. They start focusing on the process instead of the prize. They start to believe that the tools in the toolbox are more important than how fancy the buildings are at a particular college, or how expensive the tuition is, or how gourmet the food is. This is when I know I've done my job. Let's all keep in mind, this is not something that every teenager will immediately understand or appreciate or embrace. In my experience, this type of awareness will ebb and flow, and it's not always easy to predict how and when each student will become invested in the process. But when they do, you're in. As I look back on my life, I can attest that I've used these 10 sticky skills every time I started or changed a career, which I've done, as you probably know, quite a few times. This is powerful stuff. It means that these skills are portable and repeatable. If you're going to need these skills to get ahead in your life and career, why not learn them now in high school? The college admissions process is the perfect training ground to learn and practice each of these skills. It's a microcosm of a world that your child will be thrust into the minute you drop them off at, I don't know, Brady Hall, freshman year, in their dorm room at XYZ College. Why not use the time now to nail these skills, or at least raise their awareness about them? Here are the 10 skills that I explicitly teach inside Prepple Academy. If you don't enroll your child in Prepple Academy in 9th or 10th grade, I highly recommend that you teach your child these skills on your own or find somebody else who will do that. I will read the full list below in its entirety and then go back and we'll take a closer look at each one. I call it the Before My Child Goes to College, They Should Be Highly Competent and Confident in These 10 Skills list. Number one, organization. Number two, time management. Number three, communication with adults. Number four, personal reflection and self-awareness. Number five, research. Number six, attention to detail. Number seven, interview skills. Number eight, test preparation. Number nine, writing skills. And number 10, filling out applications. So let's go through these skills in turn and see how they relate to your 9th or 10th grader. Let's kick it off with number one, organization. A student with a cluttered room and cluttered backpack and desktop and notebook will think cluttered thoughts, more so than they would naturally do as a teenager. There's no way around it. They will have a harder time concentrating, working efficiently, and getting things done. It's so important for students to appreciate the value of organization earlier than later in their high school career. Any sign of organization as a freshman will pay large dividends down the road. I spend time inside Prepple Academy talking about the merits of being organized, whether it's a backpack or a desktop or a closet or the garage. And by the way, you must, as a parent, model this behavior as well if you want it to stick. Now, I use my military experience, and I explained why people in the military have to be so organized and neat. Why does everything have to be in its place? Why? Because when the enemy attacks or the bombs are falling and you have 3 seconds to grab your weapon and your food and your ammo and your water and your map, there's no time for looking around. There's no time for wondering where you put things last time. There's no time to look under your bed or in the corner. You need them now, and your life depends on it. In the college admissions process, the organized student will be light years ahead of the disheveled student. This process is skewed in favor of how organized a student is. It's a direct relationship. More organization equals more success, period. Which is why it's so important to have a blueprint to follow, which is my job. Number two, time management. This is a biggie. At some point, teenagers need to live their lives in more than 1 to 2 hour increments dictated by their phones. They need to learn how to look out on the horizon and conceptualize how something that's due in 2 weeks can be planned for or even completed now or can be broken down into pieces and done over time. This concept can take a long time to register in many teenagers. Inside Prepple Academy, I stress the importance of pulling things to the present, things in the future that can be done now. There's no need to procrastinate or put off everything until tomorrow. For most teens, if it doesn't have to be done this minute, they ignore it. This is an important habit to bring to their attention. You might not break them of it, but they should be aware. This skill can be made very tangible when it comes to tracking important test dates, for instance, the SAT. The way I have found to be most effective is to use a large wall calendar, place that calendar on the wall, and physically point out to your teen when the tests will be in the future. Use a Sharpie marker. This will give them a visual cue for the interval between today and the test 3 months from now. I know it sounds simple. So many teens use calendars on their phones, which don't allow them to really see weeks in advance, things down the road in one visual. They have to swipe and swipe and swipe, and then they lose interest. Creating and using a visual, tangible, physical, test-taking timeline. Again, I like to use a wall calendar. It's one of the best ways to get teens to conceptualize time, which must happen first before they can manage it. Once they get this concept down, the next battle is helping them to build to-do lists that they lay out and prioritize the tasks that they have ahead of them. Number three, communication with adults. Interpersonal skills are as important as they ever were. And when it comes to holding conversations, real face-to-face conversations, especially with adults, teens seem to be falling a little behind, and I'm sure technology has played some role. No longer do teens have to pick up their home phone and talk to another human being. Whether it's a telemarketer or one of their parents' friends or the doctor's office, it just doesn't happen anymore. And when they're out and about in town, their eyes are often down at their phones, making it less likely that they would engage in a spontaneous conversation with another person, particularly an adult. Their primary mode of communication is through their phones and texting, which sometimes limits their exposure to in-person conversations. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it is important that teens develop their ability to engage with adults, to make small talk, to exchange important information, and move on. Inside Prepple Academy, there are several lessons that address this issue and a few that challenge students to practice this skill. For instance, Prepwellers are assigned to make an appointment with their guidance counselor to have a sit-down meeting. The meeting doesn't have to be long. I suggest it's 10 or 15 minutes. But it forces them to begin the practice of engaging with an adult in a more mature way. And the guidance counselor represents a pretty low risk to the student. And from a college admissions point of view, developing a long-standing relationship with a guidance counselor is admissions gold for the student. Why? Because in senior year, that same guidance counselor will write your child a letter of recommendation. So the better the guidance counselor knows your child, the better the recommendation. Number four, personal reflection. The ability to be self-reflective is one of the most important parts of a teen's development that, in my opinion, is paid very little attention to. I say this because I've worked with hundreds of students over the last 5 years, and many are dumbfounded when I ask, "So what are you interested in? What are you passionate about? Do you have any idea what you might want to study in college? Do you have any idea of what industry or field or role or function you may want to play in the real world?" Now, yes, these are pretty heady questions and require a little finesse when posing them to teens. And inside Prepple Academy, we spend several lessons discussing these questions and how to think about answers. I provide exercises and activities and worksheets that help teens put some of their thoughts on paper. Not only is this a good exercise in general as part of a maturing process, but it makes the college admissions process a whole lot easier and more relevant and more effective. If a teen can tap into what they think they might like, even if it's as broad as STEM versus humanities, which is a question that I pose to them to gauge at a very high level which direction they may be heading, then they can make informed decisions about class selection, about extracurricular activities, about summer experiences, college choices, the need for internships or shadow sessions. If a teen has never received this type of coaching or mentorship, how do we expect them to make the types of decisions that will set them up for success in college. I know high school students who claim they want to be doctors. And when I ask them why, they can't articulate often a single reason other than that their parents want them to be one, or their dad is one, or their mom is one. This is a shame. Many have spent little time thinking about why they think they like medicine, how they could go about testing this theory, or how they could use this interest to make themselves a more compelling candidate for college. Helping teens think through these decisions is one of my great passions, mostly because I have a lot of experience in a lot of different jobs and careers and environments, and I feel comfortable sharing my thoughts about them. I have experience on Wall Street and in military special operations, and with graduate school, and as an entrepreneur and a civil servant and as a father. I can help them begin to clarify their thoughts. Now, in case you're wondering, by no means do I expect every 17-year-old to know exactly what they want to do with their lives, not even close, and exactly where they want to go to school and what they want to study. No, I don't. There are a small percentage who have strong convictions, and they even change their minds by sophomore year in college. This isn't a perfect science. I simply want to provide them with a framework and an awareness with which to assess opportunities as they come. That's it. What I don't like to see is a student who jumps headlong into college, paying $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year without having a plan, even a rough plan, without having thought about their future in any context, and expecting the college experience to do all the work for them. It will not. And that can be an expensive lesson to learn. Number 5, research. Students need to learn how to research. Not only to help them write papers and complete projects for school, but as part of their bigger college search, they need to learn how to find colleges, how to pick out and record relevant data points, how to compare and contrast different schools and come to their own conclusion. If somebody simply hands them a list of target colleges, they are depriving the student of an important skill that they must learn: how to make choices. If someone hands them a list, not only are they not learning the skill, but it also leaves them with very limited vested interest in the process. Inside Prepl Academy, there are multiple lessons where I walk them through a tutorial on how exactly, click by click, to develop a target list of schools based on their interests and test scores and geography and a dozen other criteria. Not only does this get them invested in the colleges on their list, but it teaches them what it's like to research. Because maybe they'll have to do this for companies they may want to work for down the road, or internship opportunities, or study abroad options. It's the exact same skill with a different goal. Why not teach the students how to do this now, using college search as the vehicle to learn the lesson? Then they'll have the confidence to repeat this process again and again and again as they make their next moves. Number 6, attention to detail. Most teens, generally speaking, aren't known for being particularly detail-oriented, at least not while they're in high school. However, this is an important skill to build and nurture over time. The college admissions process has countless opportunities that will challenge a student's attention to detail. There are testing deadlines to stay aware of, essays to write, standardized tests to take, recommendations to request, tests to register for, applications to complete, early round and regular round decisions, financial aid deadlines, honors programs deadlines. Each of these is rife with administrative details that must be correct, whether it's a birth date or a school code or a zip code or a grammatical issue or a social security number. The list goes on and on. Inside Prepl Academy, there are lessons and activities that give teens tips for what to look out for, common places that trip students up, and reasons why it's so important to pay attention to detail. This is especially important for those students who have their sights set on military academies or ROTC opportunities, where attention to detail is a way of life. It's meant to preserve life. Number 7, interview skills. These days, there is a lot of parity among high schoolers. Many of them have 4.0 GPAs or better, and impressive SAT scores, and robust extracurriculars. And sometimes, it will be a college interview that seals the deal, or not. Not only does a college interview demonstrate strong interest in the college, which goes a long way, but it also gives the student an opportunity to wow the person conducting the interview. A strong interview takes coaching and practice and experience. Inside Prepl Academy, we cover all the facets that make up a compelling interview. 1. Logistics, how to set the time, the place, what to bring. 2. Wardrobe, what to wear. 3. Common questions. 4. Strong responses. 5. How to relax. 6. How to make small talk with your interviewer. Being a good interviewer is a skill that will pay dividends for decades to come. Why not start mastering this skill now, while you're in high school? I can't even count the number of interviews that I've done over my career. I do remember my very first job interview experience with Goldman Sachs, an investment bank, during my senior year at Yale. I made it through the first few rounds of the on-campus interview and then was invited to New York City for another series of interviews. It turned out I had 18 interviews in one day. Talk about exhausting. Now, that would not have been the time to only start thinking about how to prepare for an interview. The time to do this is now. 8, test preparation. Last time I checked, I had taken over 30 standardized tests in my life, including the SAT, the Series 7 Securities Exam. I think I probably took that 3 times getting in and out of the industry. The Series 64 Insurance Exam, the ASVAB, which is a military exam, the Military Officer's Aptitude Test, another military exam, the GMAT for business school, a civil service exam to become a firefighter, a personal training certification test to become a personal trainer, and the list goes on and on and on. Most people over the course of their lives will be faced with taking a standardized test of some kind. Some will take many. Whether it's the MCAT for med school, the LSAT for law school, the real estate broker's exam. My point is, why not use your time in high school to figure out how to go about preparing for a standardized test? Most high schoolers will take the SAT or the ACT, and the score on this can be very important depending on what type of school they want to attend. So why not take this opportunity to learn about how it's done the right way? Inside Prepl Academy, I teach my students how to prepare for these exams, when to take them, how to pick the right study method, how much time to dedicate, how much is too much, how to assess progress, and how to inoculate themselves from test anxiety. This skill will be used over and over again during the course of their college and professional careers. Let's get it done now. 9, writing skills. Given the trend toward texting and short-form communication, being adept at writer will be a differentiator, period. My experience with students and their writing has been underwhelming. I've worked with many students, many who've gotten all A's in AP and honors English composition classes every semester, but still don't seem to know how to construct an outline, write with clarity, avoid overwriting. They make grammatical mistakes, they overuse cliches, they don't often write with influence. I know I'm painting a dreary picture, but it's true. Here's a question for you. When is the last time you saw a writing sample from your high schooler? When is the last time you saw a piece of paper with red ink on it, with teacher comments and feedback on something your child has written? And if so, did they ever rewrite it and turn it back in to be regraded? My guess is I'd be hearing crickets right now. I know, I've got 4 kids. And if I didn't specifically ask to see a writing sample, I would never see one. Now, to be fair, most of their writing is submitted online, and the teacher provides feedback online, but I'm not seeing any of that. This doesn't do much for parents. If our son or daughter is getting an A in English over and over again, what's there to worry about? I assume their writing's just fine. As a fellow parent, I implore you, as a fellow parent who's read a lot of essays, college essays from people who get A's in these classes, I implore you to check a writing sample from your son or daughter in 9th and 10th grade. And don't be surprised if you get some pushback from your child. They know the deal. I bet they'll be reluctant. Insist. If you catch it in 9th and 10th grade, there's still a chance for recovery. I had this exact experience with one of my own sons, who got A's in advanced English, but was not a strong writer, it turns out. So we decided to get him some additional help with a writing tutor, and we're hoping that it's not too late. Inside Prepl Academy, we address writing many times, not only when it comes to college essays, where we go through brainstorming and outline writing and composition options, but also with common grammatical mistakes that I see on a daily basis. If your child cannot write well, nip it in the bud. Number 10, filling out applications. I don't know about you, but when my kids are given a permission slip or an athletic waiver or something from school to fill out, it is usually left in a crumpled mess on the kitchen table for us to discover, usually by accident, decipher what it is, unfold it, and sign it. And unfortunately, most of the time, for expediency's sake, my wife and I fill out the form and hand it back to them. This is not a great practice, we've come to find out. It gives kids a free pass. It's important that teens begin to take responsibility for filling out forms early and often in their lives. Usually, these forms don't require any special knowledge from the parent. It's usually just name, address, phone number, birth date, maybe social security number, contact information, all things that a teen should be able to fill out. Yes, you can put your signature on it in the end, but the rest should be up to them. Why? Well, I don't recommend that the first time your child ever fills out a form is when they're filling out their college applications. They should be seasoned form filler outers by the time they open that college application. For those students who have had leadership positions in school or had a job or been a Boy Scout or a Girl Scout, they have an advantage. I've seen it. Those activities often require teens to become very familiar with paperwork. It seems like a drag at the time, but it's a key skill that they're building. If your child has not yet had the opportunity to practice filling out forms or applications, get them working on it right away. Well, those are the 10 sticky skills that I believe every high school student should be intimately familiar with before they leave high school. And why not use the college admissions process as the vehicle to help your child learn each of these skills? I built Prepl Academy to address these skills and more as they move through the four-year curriculum. And this insight is exactly why I did not take the $25,000 coaching job. I would have done all the work, and the child would have learned nothing. Now, he may have gotten into a good school because he was pretty well qualified and I'm pretty good with the applications, but his lack of engagement in the process would eventually catch up with him, and I didn't want to be part of that scenario. These repeatable and sticky skills will be needed during and after college to get a job, to secure an internship, to apply to grad school, to win a scholarship, to join a co-op program. In my business, I hear many stories from families whose children struggled in college because they were either unengaged during the process or overly coached during high school. Prepl Academy attempts to strike a balance. It's designed to help students and parents engage in the process when it matters most in 9th and 10th grade without actually doing the work for them. I guide and mentor and teach and prompt along the way, which of course is made easier with our video platform. And as you start to figure out how you plan to help your child through this process, I hope Prepl Academy is one of the options you consider. We'd love to have your child on board. Please do not hesitate to reach out to me with questions, comments, or DMs or feedback. That's it for today's episode, friends. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please subscribe to the podcast. It helps out a lot. Share it with a friend who might find it valuable. That's the way we grow this podcast. Or give us a review. Until next week, goodbye, good luck, and never stop preparing. This podcast is brought to you by Prepl Academy. Prepl Academy is my one-of-a-kind online mentoring program that delivers to your 9th or 10th grader a short, highly relevant video from me every week. Every Sunday, in fact, where I give them a heads up about what they should be thinking about to stay ahead of the game. To get these valuable lessons into your child's hands, please head over to PrepwellAcademy.com and enroll your child today.